Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 65. I'm Alex. Here with me, as always, seemingly, is Ben. What's up, Ben?
Why are you so chipper?
I've been playing Mario Kart, and also here with me is Colin. What's up, Colin?
He's also been drinking scotch.
I have. Well, I just started the scotch. Actually, I'm just chipper. Why? I don't know, because I'm going to start this podcast with a downer. Hey, everybody. Sharks were eliminated from the playoffs in six games, which is something that I think a bunch of us actually sadly predicted, although we did still go on the roller coaster with them when they had that 7-0 game. They lose to the Oilers in game six, score 3-1. In typical Sharks fashion, not that this was a terrible game, but in typical Sharks fashion, they kind of waited till the end to really, really turn it on and make a game of it. But that would not be enough. Goal from, of course, Colin. Who scored the goal in that game? Do you remember for the Sharks?
I mean, does it matter?
It was Patrick Marleau. He's playing for a contract, everyone. Patrick Marleau. Now, we don't want to spend a lot of time on this game because it was about a week ago. You probably already read on Fear the Fin or, you know, Working the Corners or whatever blog that you read what happened to that game. Instead, we want to move to the offseason, also known as the zone of pleasure for us roster baiters. Ben, before we get to that point, though, which I actually think we're going to focus on that a little bit more next podcast.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what you want to talk about, because you had a couple of pretty intriguing points that you had brought up over Facebook Messenger. What would those be?
Yeah. So what I wanted to do this week is I kind of want to talk about how we got here, right?
How we I live here. It's not very hard to get to where I am.
How we got from, last year, a team that managed to get to the Stanley Cup final, added a couple of pieces in the offseason, made some moves during the season, and yet somehow ended up getting embarrassed by a one-note team with a one-note coach in the first round.
Which, by the way, as of this podcast, is leading game two against the Ducks after winning the first game.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm cutting myself here I cut myself to know I'm still alive. What I thought we should do is talk about that. Like, how does this season end up as such a disappointment compared to last season? Was last season just magic, or is this season simply the result of too many injuries all at once at the wrong time? And here we are, you know, getting eliminated by a three-man team and the worst coach to make it to the second round.
Can I just say one thing about that?
Sure.
I am obviously,
you can say lots of things, by
no,
the way.
Well, I will say lots of things, but just to start that off, I am always disappointed a year that we don't win the cup. However, I also never personally had aspirations of making the cup this year for a couple of reasons. First of all, in the NHL these days, it's pretty difficult to make the cup 2 years in a row. I know that's not really banking on anything. It's just you don't see it a lot. Sharks had a shortened offseason because they made it to the cup last year, which we know towards the end they were quite exhausted. They didn't really have a full training camp because of the World Cup of Hockey this year. So my expectations going into the season was to definitely make the playoffs, to maybe make some noise, but I wasn't expecting a cup. Now, that's not to say that I liked how March ended. That's not to say that I liked dealing with the injuries, obviously, and that's certainly not saying I liked the way that Edmonton series went.
Yeah.
But I'm one of those people where, you know, obviously the opportunity of this core to win a cup aside didn't necessarily have delusions that we were just going to magically get to a second cup in a row and win it. So for me, this season's sort of a mixed season, right? It's disappointing in the way that it ended, not because of where we got, but because of just how that last month and a half went down. At the same time, it's kind of roughly what I thought it was going to be, minus the injuries, obviously. Could not have predicted the injuries. Could not have predicted sort of the drop in scoring.
I don't think any of us coming out of camp predicted a first-round exit.
No, not necessarily a first round exit, but I also didn't expect the Stanley Cup either.
Well, that doesn't matter, because what we're talking about is an embarrassing exit in the first round. That's the reality of things, right?
I thought you were talking about the season as a whole.
Well, we are. Isn't that the summary of the season as a whole? That well, this team that should have had better depth than it had even last year, regardless of whether a bunch of guys are fucking tired because they played in the World Cup of hockey.
No, but you also had a ton of, I mean, look, we know what the injuries are coming out of that first round, and not to say that other teams aren't carrying injuries either. Those were pretty damaging injuries.
Well, that's the thing. So, you know, it's probably worth summarizing. Sure. Right? So it turns out that knees don't bend that way.
We knew it all along. We knew it.
And Jumbo had a torn MCL and ACL. So they claimed that the damage was more extensive to the MCL than the ACL. But he was skating on one knee.
And taking faceoffs, mind you.
Yeah, we'll talk about that decision to let him play, I suspect. Kocur had a fractures in both his upper jaw and lower. Well, not the upper jaw, because that's not
his face was broken.
Basically, a fracture between his nose and a fracture in his lower jaw.
Which, by the way, makes the decision to not use the plexi mask.
Yeah.
Really cage dumb. For the first thing, and then not wear it at all. Stupid.
Agree. Tomas Hertl had a broken foot. That was not known. Donskoy had a separated shoulder.
Marlow had broken finger.
Oh, yeah, right. Marlow broken thumb, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, surely everyone else had assorted dings and dents, right?
Yeah.
Vlasic's going to go play in whatever this silly postseason tournament is, so he's probably not as injured as some of these other guys. But that's kind of the roll call, right? The Marlow, Hertl, Donskoy, Jumbo. I mean, short of like Pavs, like admitting that his leg fell off halfway through the year, you can't really get a worse sort of damage assessment, I guess.
No, I mean, that's basically you take out Vlasic and you take out, let's say, Burns and Pavelski. That's literally the core of the team.
Yeah. So it helps us understand why this team wasn't firing at all cylinders in the playoffs. It maybe doesn't totally explain March, but it, you know, the broken foot, the broken thumb, it separated shoulder. Certainly one of the big questions we had all year is what the hell's wrong with Donskoy, right?
Yeah.
And not really any answers to when he separated that shoulder. You know, he spent time out a lot of March, as I recall, and maybe some of February. So that probably is around the time of the injury.
Right.
So that's what it is, right? But still, this team 2 years ago brought in Ward, brought in Martin. This year, brought in Bodker, brought in Schlemko to fill holes, had access to Sorensen, Meyer, LeBanc, for a while, Goldobin, flipped him for Hansen. And, of course, the coaching move brought in DeBoer. So what I kind of wanted to do this week is sort of look at all those moves and say, you know, where did they get us? You know, some of those we can definitely say, hey, Stanley Cup run last year. Didn't end with a Stanley Cup, but still it was the best the Sharks have ever done.
Yeah. And coming off of a miserable season before too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, where did those moves maybe also contribute to a less great season this year, right? With declines of Ward, at least. Martin, I actually thought, even though he looked pretty tired at the beginning of the year, I think at the end of the day, I feel like Martin had a pretty damn good year being that anchor for Burns. What did you guys think?
I think Burns was just a better, more reliable defenseman this year. And I want to give credit, you know, both to Burns for, you know, focusing on the role and really sort of improving his defensive play, not falling to his stomach every time he was in doubt. But also to Martinez being a bit of a mentor or at least an example side by side. Burns was having smarter stick play. He was, you know, better positionally. He was making not horrible, you know, here's a goal passes to other teams. That was Slemko's job this year. I think Martin was exactly what we wanted him to be again. And I feel Burns's improved defensive play, which nobody ever talks about, was one of the results of us having Martin. So
well, he does Yeah, he does still – Burns still does have a tendency to go into the starfish defensive position way more than he should. But that seems to be a trend that has kind of spread across the league, not just be a Burns-esque thing. I honestly, you know, if I'm looking back on the Martin signing, granted, we don't know what he's going to give us next year when he's even older. I feel like Martin was more or less positive for both the cup run last year until he got hurt and tired at the end of the playoff run, and probably brought more than I expected this year, given how tired he looked at the beginning of the season. So
let's make one thing clear too about that contract, because I think this is an area where people start to get really tripped up as far as how contracts work, particularly for the Sharks. You know, you're not really paying guys like Martin and Ward for the entire duration of their contract. You're kind of paying. Even though the contract isn't structured this way, you're really paying for those first two seasons and praying to God that works out, because you're expecting a decline in the final yep. season.
Well, you're ascribing some foresight to Doug Wilson that some of our listeners may not.
No, yeah.
agree with
some of our listeners. I mean.
Right, because
I'm not saying the cost is correct or the deals are correct. I'm simply saying that when you offer a guy at that age with that skill set that much money for that long, you're doing it to get them on your roster, and you're not necessarily, you know, while it's very easy sometimes I think to look at a contract, like you can take a look at Marlowe's contract, right, and go, well, 6.7 million for this year, like. Actually, this was a point-wise a decent year for him. That contract is not just for this year. That's not how that contract was ever really built. And I think when it came to Martin Ward, obviously, and we talked about this, I can't remember if we were doing the podcast at that point in time, but you know, we talked about the idea of, like, you know, these guys were really getting paid heavily for their first 2 years. That was more or less the deal. And obviously, the way the rest of the contract was structured was what was required to get those 2 years out of
the
them.
The problem is that Ward is still with, or Martin and Ward are both still with us for another year. And that's we'll see. Correct. That's probably okay with Martin. So you can say that they were signed to try to keep the window open for 2 years.
Yeah.
But we're still going to be stuck with, you know, except for what happens with the expansion draft.
I'm not saying that they're good.
He's still here for another year.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're good 3 year contracts. I'm literally just saying, if your expectations were that they were going to maintain exactly their state of play given their age and situation for 3 straight years, you weren't reading that contract very well.
No. I mean, I think reasonable people can disagree about how to evaluate the reality of what was, you know, what that transaction was. Mm-hmm. You have to deal with the fact that guy's on your roster for 3 years, whether he's signed to provide, you know, a way to prop that window open for 3 years or whatever. What Martin came in and did is he provided a stable, you know, defensively focused guy to put with Burns and babysit Burns. And obviously the reason for that signing has equaled what we've gotten out of that signing. I think I would say, even though the Sharks didn't make it as far as they did last year, this year, I don't fault Martin for that.
No.
Right? He didn't decline so much that he's a clear liability. Now, that said, I said at different points of the year that I think that almost any defensively minded, you know, defenseman could do what Martin does.
Yeah.
On that pairing. But, you know, to be as old as Martin is and do that is a feat. So, you know, good on Martin. I think more so than Martin, if we're talking about just the signings from last year, I'm more concerned in our postmortem sense and where what this team manages this year. I'm much more concerned with DeBoer and Ward, right? As signings from 2 years ago, who had both positive impacts on last year's cup run, and I would argue less positive impacts on what this team managed to do this year.
So why isn't Bodker in that?
Because we haven't gotten to the signings from the summer.
He's not there yet.
Okay.
So I want to talk about them in sort of the order in which they kind of got added to the team. Bodker had no contribution to that Stanley Cup team. So fuck him. We'll talk about him in a second, basically, right?
So, yeah.
But on the same token, you know, these guys who did sign 2 years ago have had positive contributions last year, not necessarily the same this year, right? Do we all kind of agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely agree with that. I think Ward had a bit of the same dynamic on it this year as we saw in the Cup run year, where he was, you know, kind of there, kind of filling a role, and then Stanley Cup comes around and he sort of wakes up and becomes this sort of force impact player, which is exactly what we were expecting from him. And, you know, it was nice to bring that dynamic into the team. But yeah, I think this year it would have been nice to see more from Ward. And yeah, I've said my piece on Martin. I think he's great. My big concern now is, who is Brent Burns skating with in two seasons? And
well, that, you know, we'll definitely start
that transition now.
Yeah, we'll definitely, I think, talk about that more next week, I think. I do want to say, by the way, you know, Colin, what you mentioned there, that this idea that Ward, where he really kind of came to life last year, was in that Cup run, because he had those spectacular goals he scored in almost every series.
Yeah.
But it is important to note that Ward had a great year during the regular season last year. I mean, he's a 35-year-old dude last year who scored half a point a game. 21 goals, 22 assists. That's pretty damn good for a guy who, I think, what is he making? 3.5 a year?
Four a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's 3.2.
That's damn good return for 3.2 per year, right? The problem is this year, he did not duplicate that effort. I think we can all agree.
Yeah, it was not quite there.
Yeah. So, you know, I we've got another year of Joel Ward on our books here, right? A guy who's going to be 37. He's gone from, now granted, Joel Ward has been up and down throughout his career, so I don't really know how to how to project him, really. Well, so what do you guys think?
I honestly think Ward and Martin both, they need to be the mentor transition pieces for a lower, like a new player. So like, you put Martin down on a third pairing with a defender that you want to bring up. Like, I choke saying this, but you start to consider skating Dylan and Burns together. You use these guys to be senior pieces that help a new, you know, maybe an untested or untempered rookie, you know, skate with somebody a bit more solid and reliable who can sort of be the calming factor through lots of situations. So, you know, Ward down on the bottom six so that you get him skating with, you know, LeBanc or Meyer or O'Regan. And, you use them up in a reserved way that helps bridge into your new core.
I mean, I guess, you know, we talked about this at different times of the year because Joel Ward, I think we all agreed, and by the way, feel free to disagree with me, seemed slow and ineffective at times this year. And this maybe plays into more to that other guy that I really want to talk about, which is DeBoer, which is, did Ward, you know, draw into the lineup way more than he probably deserved to draw in this year when it came down to it?
Well, I think in general, so my two complaints this year is we saw no real team identity getting evolved beyond like attributes that we were all saying the season before, oh, we need to be faster, oh, we need to be this. But we didn't see actual line chemistry getting formed. We didn't see, you know, consistent strategic pairings getting done in a way that makes you go, oh, okay, you know, here's this line's sort of dynamic and how that dynamic's getting either amplified or slightly changed by the addition of a third player. We're seeing none of that, you know, and maybe it was just because the injuries were staggered and layered in such a way that DeBoer never had the opportunity to create those pairings plus one. But, you know, I don't really buy that. I look at the season and we had those times where, yeah, we were missing one player and it was an important player, but why are the rest of the lines getting blendered every game? So, you know, is DeBoer failing to use his pieces, or is he failing to lean on youthful players? Is he just going completely schizophrenic and just trying to throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. It felt a bit crazed this season. That was the most frustrating part for me.
Well, so, you know, this is something, Alex, you've talked about a lot, is DeBoer came to us with a reputation.
Right.
From his New Jersey run, right?
Yeah. A reputation that he favored veterans and was slow to trust certain players, sometimes new or younger players. I've been a little quiet for once for the last like 5 minutes. I think the hard thing for me evaluating some of this stuff is, again, I'm not framing myself as some sort of super genius, because I think we were all kind of on the same page with this when a lot of these deals were signed. But, you know, when it came to Martin and Ward, not that I would have predicted the Sharks actually making it to the Cup last year, because I most certainly did not and would not again if I could do it again. But at the same time, I think we all recognize that these were pieces. DeBoer maybe aside, let's take him out of the equation for a second and just kind of hop back to Ward Martin. Those were pieces that maybe we wouldn't have been our first choice pieces. Nothing against those guys when I say that. Wasn't even on our radar as potential options. Those were win now pieces. So I think like when I sort of see the transgression in play, let's say from like Ward, again, it's like, I'm not, that doesn't go beyond what my expectations were. Now, that's not to say that it puts us in a good situation, and it's not to say that I don't notice it and kind of feel shitty about it. But you know, I also thought we were going to get one, maybe two good years out of those guys, and that was my expectation. And there were a lot of injuries here this year. There was a lot of jumbling as a result, and I don't know how much. You know, I'm not in the locker room, obviously. My preference would be when guys go down, other guys step up, and I think in a few places a couple of players did that, Ward not necessarily being one of them. But it's also kind of hard for me to judge how much of that was sort of DeBoer flinging things around. Now, as far as DeBoer goes, you know, I know where you're going with this discussion, Ben, and it's pretty telegraphed. And a lot of other, you know, Fear the Fin and a lot of other blogs have also sort of been talking about it, which is, you know, did DeBoer handle this season, particularly the playoffs, properly, given the situation or the cards that he had, you know, in his hands? And what does that mean regarding the future of this team? Where is that identity, to Colin's point?
Right.
And how does he play into it? When I look at DeBoer's first season, I think DeBoer's first season was a pleasant surprise. He brought stability where there wasn't any. Now, the flip side of that is that I also didn't believe that the team that missed the playoffs was a shit team. I thought there were a lot of factors that went into that, and a lot of it in the end felt like Todd had just run out of, you know, steam or ideas with the roster. So having a coach come in and right the ship again, not predicting a Stanley Cup, is not necessarily surprising to me. And that's not a knock on DeBoer. It's just that, you know, I thought the year before was more fluky than anything. So here we have him coming in. He offers stability. We get to a point where there's a lot of injuries. He makes a couple of baffling lineup decisions. Where I really got tripped up was the playoff run specifically. And I talked about this. I don't think we talked about it on the podcast because I don't think it occurred yet. But one of the things that really baffled me was, for a team that sort of had issues scoring consistently all season, they played their best game in game four. And then we never saw that lineup again.
So we did talk about this before, but keep going.
Yeah, but and like that to me, to this day, to have lost the next two games and to have, you know, not necessarily seen the same level of offensive production. Now, look, that game may have been, you know, an anomaly, maybe, but I don't understand when you finally have that spark and that chemistry, especially when the team had been, you know, pretty flat through March, why you wouldn't run that again, and why you would pull Meyer out specifically when it seemed like, you know, while he wasn't necessarily putting, you know, he wasn't scoring goals, didn't mean he didn't look like he wasn't impacting things. Yeah. So for me, hold on real quick. So just to wrap up. So for me, the DeBoer thing is sort of like, you know, wasn't shocked that the team was better under a new coach, although where the team ended up exceeded my expectations by quite a bit. And then this season, You have a situation where he's juggling a lot of injuries. He's juggling a team that's obviously pretty tired. I don't think he did the best job of it. I also don't think that the results of this season are gonna get him fired either.
So
Sorry. I need to hit on this because, like, this is my core complaint for this season. Is we had a couple times when we saw looks of this team that were outstanding. I mean, the 6 or 7 point game we scored in December, I think it was, or January. We never saw that line again. We never saw that team again, purely in player composition. And every time during the season we saw this team sort of break out and go, hey, you know, late playoffs might be a thing for us. The next game, it was a different lineup, different personnel. Like, we just never stuck with any sort of combination or composition that looked good. And I mean, we put Bogker down on the third or fourth line at one point in the regular season. He does really well, and we immediately push him back up to the top six. It's just, yeah, I'm sorry. It's
the one decision that I understood why he made it, although I absolutely do not agree with it, was his game six decision to roll with veterans. And I listened to the pregame logic there. And the pregame logic there was, this is a must-win scenario, and I need the guys that I know, you know, have done it before and can do it again. And I get it.
Except those guys were all dead.
Yeah. No. That's the thing. I get the logic. I do not agree with it in this instance.
Not really even logic.
But it's not logic.
It's not. It's an assumption. It's his knee jerk, right? So here's the thing. That worked for him last year. Right, leaning into the core is arguably what got this team to as far as it got. Right, in the big minutes, Pavelski, Couture, Jumbo, Marlowe, Ward, the old dudes scored the key goals, and it worked because he was leaning into them. But you have to be stupid to look at a guy with no MCL and ACL. To look at a guy with a broken face.
I'm not disagreeing.
And make the same decisions in this playoffs. I have a rant on this. I went to game six. I didn't want to, but I did. A friend of mine had tickets. His friend bailed on him. I decided to buy the ticket off of him. And I will never, ever in my life now forget the just sheer stupidity in the third period. They've got a power play. And he takes a timeout to keep Jumbo, Couture, Burns, Marlowe, and Pavs on the ice. One of those guys has no knee. One of those guys has no face. And that power play unit has done fuck all the entire playoffs. And he spends a timeout to keep them on the ice.
Oh, sorry. What were they doing during the regular season?
Yeah, same thing. But
yeah.
But my point is, now they're not only doing fuck all, they're half dead.
Yep.
So it, you know, that reputation he brought to us that he doesn't trust the young guys, that did play a part on the outcome of this season, right? In the sense that when push came to shove, up until the point that one was lost on waivers and one got traded, we saw way too much Nieto and we saw too much Wingles. We saw probably too much Ward when he could have used rest. We saw too much Bodker. We didn't see enough Goldobin. We didn't see enough Sorensen. We didn't see
a lot of Jones.
We didn't see enough
a lot of Dell.
And that's a fair point, too, is that we didn't see enough Dell probably to save Jones some wear and tear. Not that Jones, I mean, Jones was up and down in the entire six games he got to play in the postseason, but he was.
But he was trending up.
Good enough.
More up and down.
Yeah, totally agree.
Jones was absolutely not contributing.
Which does, by the way, you know, lead to what the conversation is going to be next year, which is where next week, which is, you know, what does this team do next year, and can DeBoer do the right thing for it when his clear gut call is lean into the old guys, even when they simply by all possible ways of evaluating can't do it. Yeah. In the same sense that what he did was successful last year, doing the same thing this year led to the lack of success is basically what I'm saying and summarizing here.
Yeah,
I would say.
We all agree. Anybody who's been looking at the Barracuda and questioning, hey, when are these guys going to come up, have at least some hint as to the frustration that we're probably going to be stuck in next season. Or something, something snaps on DeBoer and, we actually get to see our bottom six, be a showcase for young talent with, like I said, maybe you've got Ward on the wing there to just sort of be that, that metronome. I question the fact that LeBanc got such sketchy use, even though,
He hit a wall, by the way. I mean, he did.
Oh, yeah, he did. But you have to let a player play through that.
I agree. I guess my point here is, and I've left a name out there, we saw way too much Haley, right?
Yeah.
For these guys to grow and get better, they have to make mistakes. They have to play. And every game that Haley was in the lineup was a game where one of these young guys didn't get an opportunity to grow.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say it's indicative of just how much we overused Haley, that we used him enough in order that we are able to start seeing some patterns by which we go, okay, he's not that bad.
Right.
It's like we gave him enough play time to sort of not be dog shit. And we're looking at that being like, oh, well, maybe this is the reason. And then along comes Meyer, does everything Haley, we were saying, oh, Haley's not bad because... And he played way more responsibly, took way less penalties. And we knew, he was just, a fingernail's breadth from having a scoring breakout that would make us all happy. Where Haley, we're just like, maybe the puck will go off his face and go in. So, I was teasing you during the playoffs, what's the difference between Haley and Meyer? Because you keep saying grit and, impact.
I didn't say grit. I never used the word.
I don't know where you got that
okay.
from.
Maybe
you interpreted what I said as grit.
Maybe you didn't say grit.
What I said was Meyer is a bowling ball. And I liked to see him kind of go in physically and break up plays and protect the puck and go through guys.
Ladies and jerks, Ben did say grit in written
form. I never said grit.
And here's why. And here's why I don't buy that he did, Colin, because grit to Ben is Marlowe to you, and I know you would never say a Marlowe thing. So there's no way Ben would.
I never said grit.
It's like you just
you interpreted my bowling ball comment as being a positive. I didn't.
You said grit.
I didn't. I don't subscribe to grit. Grit.
I'll go check through the chat logs.
Okay.
Well, anyway, Ben, let's get to the argument, which is, and I know you're going to make it, so I'm just going to steal it from you.
Okay.
Or set you up for it. Do you think that DeBoer is the right man for the future of this team?
No, but I think I want to make a case for that next.
he wants an entire pod. He already said he wanted
an entire podcast. Was the setup for next week?
Hold on, because I want to talk about Bodker and Schlemko.
Oh, okay.
Right, because so we get through the Stanley Cup final. The guys are dropping dead tired, according to Alex, and have to play in the World Cup. Of whatever that was and come back tired and what have you. But we all kind of, we have an off season. Doug goes out and tries to plug holes. And I think we all agreed that, one of the holes was, bottom pairing defenseman.
Wrong execution across the board.
Really? You don't think Schlemko was the right call?
I don't know what the right call was, but I think in the end, I don't know. I thought Schlemko's season was okay. I thought his playoffs were miserable.
Yeah. I don't. So here's my thing about Schlemko. So I thought he was the right. I agree. Right idea. Puck moving guy to go with Dylan. I thought that there was also that guy already in the organization. Three of them.
Right.
Mello, Heed, Ryan, but whatever. Doug Wilson is going to go out and get veterans so that, fucking DeBoer will actually play them. So it made sense to me. Bodker, I think we all agree. Well, actually,
Speed.
I definitely...
Right idea, wrong execution.
No, I don't even think he's the right idea.
No, Bodker, Ben and I both had Bodker on our please no Douglas, because
I'm not saying I liked Bodker. I'm saying speed was the goal there. Speed scoring winger, wrong guy.
I think my
right
goal
idea,
was
right idea.
Definitely, getting the team faster was a plus. I think the two guys I put forward who I thought the Sharks should pursue were Eric Staal. That's not a speed move, but that would have been a center who would have fit in really well with his team, and David Perrin, who did bring speed. Compared to some of the guys on this team. Obviously, neither of those guys landed with the Sharks. Instead, they went for a possession black hole. And, you know, even as we looked at it...
Well, hold on a second. We don't know necessarily that they didn't...
True.
...send the offers or inquire.
We don't know.
Based off of the contracts that Doug Wilson seems to need to give out to get players to come, I think Martin, Ward, and Bodker are prime examples of those. It may very well have been that he reached out and the answer was a pretty quick no. They have a pretty shitty travel schedule, and, you know, it's effing expensive to live here, so it's not the best value for a player. Now, obviously, if you want to win the Cup, it is a team that is periodically close.
Counterpoint, it is a team coming off a Stanley Cup final. If you were going to get... And by the way, it's not like Eric Staal was a guy that teams were pursuing like crazy, and neither was Perrin. It's part of the reason why I thought both of them would be good fits. Staal, it's a redemption shot, which he totally did redeem himself in Minnesota this year. And Perrin was a guy who has bounced around for whatever reason, but always drives possession and does score at that, you know, scores at the same rate that, say, a Joel Ward did last year.
And it's hard to play against.
Yeah.
Like, he brings that Meyer aspect of, you know, oh, crap, it's that guy.
So if there's a chance, you know, that you're going to be able to get those guys here, I felt like this last offseason was the right time. It's not like they were setting the world on fire. Bodker was a guy nobody wanted. You know, he'd been traded twice at least. He was traded last year to Colorado, and Colorado didn't want him.
Yeah,
that should be a warning sign. Anyway,
but Ben, keep in mind, you know, Shane Doan, we could have him soon.
I kind of felt the entire season that Bodker was sort of like Anne/Egg from Arrested Development, and I was Michael as far as her
exactly. Ooh. But here's the thing. What I don't get about that is Bodker just simply doesn't fit into Boer's system, period. Right. And they signed him for 4 years.
Well, okay. So maybe you can help. You can flex your education muscles here and help me and our listeners understand what's the Boer system other than skate your ass off from end to end of the ice.
So DeBoer's system, and this is going to be. Maybe Alex, you can actually describe it better than I can. But my perspective of his system is collapse on D, block shots, basically, you know, be below the puck when you're in the defensive zone, collect the puck, get out. Oftentimes, you know, dump the puck in and try to recollect it, kind of an LA model. But if you can gain the zone with possession, then, you know, by all means, try it.
Yes. And a very obvious favor to cycle to the point for the shot.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And so the issue with Bodker is he's not a cycle player. He's a breakout player, right? He's you're hoping to get a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 with Bodker on the
periphery. Yeah, he's a streaking winger.
He's a periphery guy, right? He doesn't, you know, on offense, what the Sharks want to do is they want to get a guy in front of the goalie. They want to have a guy on the circle and a guy behind the net. And if they can't get it to either of those guys, then they put it back to a guy on the point to try to shoot at the guy who's, in theory, screening the goalie. That's the entirety of DeBoer's uncreative offense. But it sure worked last year, so whatever. And Bodker wants to skate with it. And he's not particularly good at holding on to it. And so when he kind of gets into a tight spot along the boards, he's much more likely to just, you know, blindly try to pass the puck to a guy who's not there. And then the other team's in transition. Off they go to the races.
Can we talk about one more key addition that we forgot from 2 years ago?
Absolutely.
Steve Spott.
Goalie coach?
Nope.
Oh, then just I have no idea.
In charge of power play.
Oh, God. Well, that leads to a big conversation, which is is the power play were the power play issues this year a result of changes to the system, or player issues?
Yeah, I don't know, but here's the thing. It was dog shit.
It was.
And it's kind of hard to ignore that, you know, the level of drop. Now, I'm not going to place all blame on any one individual because I don't really think that's how it works, but that is something that kind of needs to be paid attention to here, because the Sharks power play took a nose, the special teams took a nose dive, so, and that definitely burned us through March and definitely burned us in the playoffs.
Yep. So let me sort of ask a supplementary question to maybe clarify your opinions on that topic.
Yep.
Should we be coaching into our strengths, or should we be pulling our players to play to a specific system? So should the system adapt to the components, or should the components adapt to the system?
The coach, my perspective has always been that the best coaches build a system that fits the players they're given. Right? Yeah, so DeBoer should have found a way to make Bodker work. Is that where you're heading?
Specifically on the power play, because
I think I get what you're saying, and I think it's not necessarily 50-50, but there needs to be both give and take there. If a system is not working, and clearly not working for as long as it wasn't working this season, maybe because you don't have the correct pieces in there, or I don't know. Honestly, the pieces didn't change all that much there.
No, they didn't.
So there's really no excuse. And if the team's struggling, let's say it's because of injuries or something else, then, you know, at some point, I think what we finished 25th, you can't be that abysmal the entire season. Like at some point, you know, if your system is no longer working at a point, then as a coach, it is on you to start to adapt. Now, how far you adapt, how far off of your system you go, or whether or not you just, you know, tweak things here or there, I think that's the difference between someone who is able to go far and someone who's not necessarily able to go far.
Yeah.
For example, if you run your system to, let's take last year's Stanley Cup, right? And you face a team that is plumb better than you in most of those categories. If you run that exact same system and you don't make any modification, you probably lose. Barring some luck in there. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to make a wholesale change to your system, because that would be completely illogical. But at least roster-wise, you need to be able to figure out, like, if these pieces aren't working, what other pieces do I have? How can I slot them in here? And if I can't slot anything in here, how do I tweak things slightly to meet halfway? And I kind of feel like that was not the case this year.
So
the power play, I complained about this all season. And it really came to bite us in the playoffs. The sort of semi-umbrella cycle back to Burns for the shot became so incredibly telegraphed that by the time we got to the Oilers, they knew exactly how to defend against it. And they did.
So yeah. Here's what I'm going to say about that. I don't think the system changed between last year and this year.
No, I agree. I don't think
the data shows that the result of the system changed.
Yes.
Because the more shots were taken from the point this year than last year, which is not what you want to be doing on the power play, right? You want to be trying to get a shot inside the scoring plate area, right? Out from the goal to the circles and back. And instead, for whatever reason, that puck was going to Burns way more often than it should, or going to Vlasic way more than it should. And by the way, I'll say it one last time. Mark Edward Vlasic on the power play is malpractice, whatever. And so those shots were getting blocked, and that was leading to transitions and clears and bad stuff, right? So
shorthanded goals.
Yeah, exactly. And so my question, if I could go back and look at every power play between these 2 years, and I just simply don't have access to the video or the time to do that, is does the problem come down to Pavs slowed down, can't get to the spot that he needs to be in to take the circle shot, you know, the cross ice pass? Is Jumbo slowed down so he can't get to the space to make that pass? Is Marlowe slowed down so he's not playing the role of disruptor that he had previously? What part does Couture's various injuries have to play in this too? Right, that's what I would go look at if I was, you know, working for the Sharks analytics department, basically. It's like, why did it get so much worse this year when the system didn't change?
Part of it may also be, because you didn't mention it, part of it may be that they saw almost instantaneous success with that pass back to Burns, and they got addicted to it. Because we saw a lot of holding, And, you know, again, I don't have access to – I'm not going to go back and watch every single tape either. Not my job. Got other jobs I got to deal with. But, you know, from the memory slash eye test, it looked like the Sharks would hold on to the puck for long periods of time, yeah, regardless of whether or not players were in position, or they would choose to pass first versus taking the shot and trying to collapse into it. And that was something that I really felt hurt a lot in March in particular, were situations where there's a lane to shoot and the forward, for whatever reason, be it on the power play or not. You know, I keep kind of using that Marlowe Schlemko, I think in game two, maybe, where you got Schlemko coming down the ice. He makes a nice pass to Marlowe. Marlowe has a lane. Schlemko's covered. Marlowe opts to pass it back to Schlemko. First of all, Schlemko is not really a big shooting defenseman, in my opinion. He's now covered. Marlowe had the open lane to shoot. In what situation does it make sense to do that? It doesn't. And there were a lot of those decisions that seem to occur, again, but short memory here, but through March and through the playoffs as well. It was like, a forward having the opportunity to do the logical thing and instead opting to pass it. Now, in years past, the frustration with that was, it felt like, especially when time was running out, you know, there's a minute left on the clock, the Sharks would take 50 passes to try to find the ideal play. This year, I didn't feel like it was that as much as it was basically just trying to get Burns the open lane. And again, Burns had a lot of success with it. So I understand why you would get addicted to it. But at the same time, if you do it every single time, it becomes telegraphed and fairly easy to from a planning perspective, not necessarily an execution perspective, because Burns does have a quick shot, but fairly easy to plan against.
But that's on Burns too, right? He doesn't have to pump a shot into a guy's skates. The whole point that he can play if things are working is the decoy. Right. Pull guys out of position. But then he would launch a puck into guys' skates. And there you go.
Yeah, but let's face it, being on the point and having the second the puck even looks like it's coming to you trigger the entire team to, you know, press towards your sector and your man coverage to rush you, I mean, that's a shit position to be in, especially knowing that, you know, there's no one behind you between you and the goal. So.
I hear you, but that's the whole point on a power play.
No, it's the whole point of not putting the puck to Burns, but I'm more defending Burns having to be in a oh fuck situation as part of the systemic plan.
Yeah, but I don't know what he does
in that situation.
Yeah, but I don't feel like he ever really, again, eye test, not in his head, visually looked like he was rushed or in that situation. It felt to me like the puck went back and he opted to shoot the second he had a semi-reasonable shot. Now, the con of that, which Ben sort of hinted at, is that if he does it and it gets blocked, guess what?
There's
an odd man rush the other way.
So circle back to one other thing you said, Alex, is, you know, as we went through the year with Schlemko, there are members of the community who thought Schlemko had a great year. I'm not one of those guys. I thought he was okay. I think DeMello was just as good, maybe even in some cases better, because I think Schlemko is really good at moving the puck and has a really good shot that he didn't get to honestly use a lot because you know, he's got to cover for Dylan to some extent, you know, in the offensive zone. I think DeMello is a little bit more of a balanced guy who's a little bit bigger and better in the defensive zone, as well as having a pretty decent shot and being able to play okay covering for Dylan's mistakes. And honestly, actually, I can't believe I'm saying this.
Get your tape recorders out.
I thought Dylan had a really good year, guys.
There was some crickets there for a second, huh?
So I'm not really going to disagree with you. But I don't want to praise Dylan for fear that he actually listens to this. And just do better, Dylan. You're not what you were.
In my perfect world, I would have traded Dylan for an asset midway through this year. Yes. Whatever that asset is, because
I would have traded Dylan for Sharks an asset and just written it to
games. They're gonna, now the Sharks are gonna lose Tim Heed because he's not gonna re-sign here. Given that he didn't get up this year. DeMello's, I think, an RFA again. And Ryan could come up, but I'm not sure he has the right-handedness to match with Schlemko. So who knows? So all that said, you know, Schlemko's fine, but clearly he wasn't a difference maker, and I don't think he needed to be signed. I think again, the whole point of that was Doug has, you know, the thought bubble above Doug's head. How do I make sure that I don't have to acquire a Roman Pollock again to play on that pairing? I need a veteran who DeBoer will play. All right, let's get Schlemko.
Yeah. I always kind of took the Schlemko signing as a correction to the Roman Pollock move. And again, not advocating for that selection necessarily. It just felt like this was something we needed. We got the wrong guy the first time. Here's a slightly better guy. Or you know, you could do a lot better than Polk, I guess.
But it needs those team goals you mentioned earlier, right? Which is more speed, more ability to move the puck, because Pollock was basically
slow
orange cone.
Yeah. And again, it's really hard to tell whether or not these were just sort of slight head scratchers from Wilson, or whether or not this was the best that Wilson was able to secure. And that's something you got to keep in mind. I mean, it's not there are a lot of stupid general managers, I would say, but I don't necessarily think that, you know, Wilson seems to have his good days and his bad days. But it's pretty clear, I think, with both these signings, what he was attempting to do, and that these may have been the best pieces that he had available to do them with. Now, again, that doesn't mean you offer them the contract that you offer them. Even if that's what it takes to get them on the team, Ben, to your point, I would have looked back at those trades and I would have looked at my roster and said, do I really need to make this deal?
Exactly.
But I'm not the one in charge. So
on the same token, I don't think I necessarily assign Doug blame for where the season ended up.
No, not at all.
I think Bodker is a bad call and a bad fit, but I think if he'd been basically consigned to a speed fourth line role, a la a couple of other defensively deficient guys you saw around the league, like Thomas Vanek, who was used as a fourth liner and a power play specialist.
Gagne
is another great example. Thank you. I think he would have been fine. The problem is that's not how DeBoer envisions the team working. And we saw that all year with how he built his fourth line. And so that takes us back. What's that? Sorry, go ahead.
We did see Bodker on the bottom six, and he did do well there.
Yeah.
And every time he did do well, we pulled him back up.
It was very brief. Because again, DeBoer has a very regimented way that he wants this team to work, I think. And I don't know that anybody will ever be able to break him of that, which leads, of course, to that question you asked me earlier, Alex, as to who is the right guy to lead this team forward. Is it DeBoer? And it's not. Because I think what we'll talk about next week is, what does this team need to do? And DeBoer even said this in the postseason. He actually said some guys need to step up. And I think to myself, well, maybe you need to fucking play them.
Yep.
Bald douchebag.
There we go. Just
I don't have the hate that you have, but yes,
it's not. I'm just frustrated, right? I think our fan base is frustrated. Again,
bring Gary back.
Well, when Todd wins the Stanley Cup this year,
here's the thing, though, Ben. I think worth pointing out before you completely absolve Wilson, because I don't think Wilson was, you know, necessarily the cause of anything this season, right? Injuries or injuries and, you know, short enough season and all the other junk. At the same time, you knew what the pattern with DeBoer was.
Right.
You interviewed him extensively. You said he was the guy that you had wanted previously. So it's not like you hadn't been following him.
Correct.
But again, I don't think that any of these moves, Ward, Martin, Schlemko, Bodker, DeBoer, I don't think any of these were really intended to be long-term moves. I think these were win-now moves, and we didn't win now. Now we had a larger turnaround than we expected, you know, last year, which was phenomenal. This year, we despite, I would argue, having a much better roster, didn't play to it and took steps back. So now the question becomes next week's podcast, which is, what do you do? Because the Sharks right now are, they're approaching a fork in the road. In terms of the directions they can take. It's the first time we've truly been here in a while. And it's not just because of Marlowe and Thornton. There are other things at play as well. For example, the the ever delayed handing down the torch to a new core, because now you're at the point where, you know, the Pavelski core is getting up there in age as well. I think the one thing I want to point out before we get to next week is I'm reading, and I know you are too, Ben. I know you are too, Colin. Reading a lot of people who are seemingly forgetting what the UFA class this year is like, who are seemingly forgetting what picks the Sharks actually have this season and what this draft looks like. So I want to point out that the Sharks don't have great picks this year. And we will talk about, Ben, I know what you're going to get into.
But they didn't give up their first.
Yeah. There you go. They're not in a particularly great position draft-wise. Not that this draft, to my knowledge, is, you know, there isn't a generational player that's popped up that I've read about at the moment.
No, it's not.
The UFA class this year, not a great UFA class. Not that they're ever really truly great. No, but like your best option is TJ Oshie, who's what, 30?
No, he was younger, I thought.
He's up there, I think. You know, the Sharks next year are, he's 30. The Sharks, you know, this offseason, a lot of the decisions that they're going to be making this offseason are not necessarily going to be choosing that direction for next year. Maybe they will be. We don't know. And we'll get into that. But I do think it's important before we get into that conversation that people just understand, like, for next podcast, people do some homework. Look at the Sharks' contracts, look at the salaries, look at their draft picks, look at the UFA class, look at the RFA class, and form your own opinions on where you think this team's really going to be moving.
Don't tell us to pick up Delzato.
Let me ask you both a question.
Yes.
Ultimately, when it comes to judging what happened this year, what happened to lead the Sharks to a first-round exit, do you guys think it was – The primary culprit is, and I've got three possible options here, you're welcome to add one. Was it injuries? Was it this aging core walking off a cliff all at the same time? Or was it failure of coaching and system?
Are we picking one or are we putting them in order?
Well, I mean, you could put them in order if you want to. The other thing we didn't talk about is, and it's fine, I think, is that, you know, we did see the debut of several rookies this year. Sorensen, Meyer, LeBanc, O'Regan, Goldobin briefly before he got traded, turned into Hansen. We really didn't talk about that acquisition of Hansen at all, but Hansen briefly kind of showed some chemistry with the top line and then got moved around, you know, talking to Colin's problem, which is that DeBoer never settled on lines, really.
I would say Hansen showed chemistry with every line.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. He granted short series. He didn't do much against Edmonton, but whatever. I mean, anybody can disappear across four or five games. So I'm not going to blame that on him. Rank it. Injuries, aging core walked off cliff, coaching/system problems. What would you rank as the biggest thing? I tend to hew towards injuries personally.
Yep. Nope.
All right. So I'll be the difference, and I'll say order is coaching, injuries, walking off cliff.
Okay. Because Marlowe actually, his decline was more 2 years ago. So he went to 48 points last year, 46 points this year from 56 the year before. So whatever. He had a good year. Jumbo is the one who declined. He's down to 55 points this year. Pav's declined a little bit. Ward declined. So those are my worries. Is it does feel like, especially towards the back half of this year, guys basically died. But then we learned also broken thumb, broken face, no knee, foot fell off.
Can I point something about all that too?
Yep.
Is I think an important homework, people, again, an important question to ponder.
Yep.
Which is a very hard question given the prior two seasons. How radically different they were. Do you, I'm not asking you guys, I'm just asking the fans in general, when you think about it, do you feel, you know, I mentioned before, I felt like 2 years ago when we missed the playoffs, that was fluky.
Yeah.
You could argue maybe that wasn't, and making the cup was fluky. I would disagree with you, but you could throw that argument out there. This year, especially Ben, since you and I believe that it was much more injury heavy, and I think a lot of people probably feel the same way, You know, you have to look at it as, do you think this year would, is this a good team or is this not a good team? Was this right. just an off year or is this an actual decline in play overall? I mean, these yeah. are, and again, if you're going to play fantasy GM, these are things you really have to consider.
Absolutely.
So this is why I put coaching before injuries, because as we talked about during the podcast, your power play is struggling with what you have, the pieces you have, and we see no change. We see no adaptation from the coaching standpoint. You see injuries and we see no, you know, real meaningful change from the coaching standpoint. We see some breakout rookie performances and, you know, the same, they hit hardship, they get thrown back in the dumpster. You know, I think this yeah. is a team that has the ability to make the playoffs next season.
Oh, definitely.
But will they be coached there?
Right. Will they be, will the players be put in the position to achieve to get them there? And to be honest, like, we can't answer that question without then talking about, you know, what, like we will next week. Do you resign Jumbo at what number? Do you resign Marlowe at what number? Who do you protect in the expansion draft? Who do you hope Vegas takes?
So right? here, help me and
who coaches some of the this other... team so O'Regan will play.
Yeah. So help me with, along with some of the other less informed people. The schedule is fantasy draft, rookie draft, free agency?
Or is it you mean expansion draft? There is no fantasy draft.
Sorry. Expansion draft, rookie draft, free agency. Or is it rookie draft, expansion draft, free agency?
I think expansion draft.
Expansion draft, rookie draft, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, they basically get to set their roster and then participate in the draft as if it was any other draft.
Okay.
Or so they're any other team. But I do find it extremely weird how the NHL is handling the expansion draft, especially given that the NFL just turned their actual draft into a party / event more so than it ever been before. The NHL is opting to have the Vegas Golden Knights choose their team quietly and then announce it during the NHL awards. Seems weird to me, but hey,
yeah,
I don't run the NHL either.
Well, I don't think any brain is running the NHL.
So it seems like we all agree that injuries was a key reason, but all of these things played a role in the underachieving this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm a little slower to hop on the veteran decline as being a key reason. I mean, I certainly don't think it helped, but again, I think it kind of comes down to how you view the rest of the season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, like, this game or this team more or less rises or falls with Jumbo at the moment. Yeah. And I do think that's part of the problem with how they go forward. And if Jumbo declines, then the power play declines and scoring declines in general, right? So, and same with Pavs, right? I mean, honestly, it's that core pairing of Jumbo and Pavs that really kind of, I think, overachieved last year in some sense versus their ages.
Well, the big thing I think contributing to the cup run was that we had a team with a number of different looks, a number of different paces of play that was really hard to defend against at times, because you'd have, you know, the Couture-Donskoy pairing with, you know, whoever was their role player at the time coming at you in one way. You had our third line, whichever form that took, coming at you in another way. And then you had this threat of, oh, did you remember where Pavelski is? Well, there he is scoring on you. And the weight that Thornton and Pavelski had to carry was a lot less. You know, they really just needed to do what they do and not sort of have to shake the other team loose. You had two or three other lines coming at that team, tripping them up, giving them different looks, you know, pulling their defense out of shape, and then you had our top line coming in and capitalizing. This season, it was like, where's Pavs? Where's Joe? Why aren't they carrying all the weight? It's like, well, we've got we have nine other skaters out there who are supposed to be doing this as well. You know, where are those guys? Where's
right.
Where's the depth?
Yeah. And that depth is really going to be the key question of what this team is able to do next year.
And I'll say depth and play dynamic, because we saw depth scoring this season that we were looking for last season, but it was sort of a player stepping up and doing something really good. It wasn't this structured approach where it's like, oh, here's our speed line coming and doing this sort of play and, you know, pulling the defense out that way. It was just, oh, there's LeBanc, Meyer, you know, whoever being in a good position and doing something smart.
Well, gents, these are topics for another week. I think we need to wrap this podcast up. I forgot to do the call outs last time around. I apologize. So if you don't know where to find us, you probably missed this podcast as well. But you can find us on iTunes. Please subscribe to us. Just look up Circling the Cup. You can find us on Android platforms. Just do the same thing. You know where to go, Android people. You're smart. Twitter. You can find us on Twitter at Circling the Cup. You can find us on Facebook at Circling the Cup. We will be here next week to talk about a couple of things. Do the Sharks bring back Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau? The topic I'm sure everyone will have exhausted to death by the time we get to it, and we'll continue to exhaust to death until we know what Wilson's going to do. We will talk about whether or not we've got the core we need. We will talk about what the future should be or needs to be. Is the boar in that? Once again, I'm sure Ben will bring that up. Until next time, guys. One last thing I want to point out is that our podcasting schedule throughout the off season will be a little irregular just because there isn't enough news week in, week out. But guess what? If you follow our Facebook page or you subscribe to us on the necessary platforms or follow our Twitter, you will know when we are podcasting. Also, always feel free to write us. I swear, no one writes us. So if you do write us, we will probably answer you on the air, even if it's just to laugh at you. Unless you're Patrick Marleau, in which case Colin will answer your question directly. Guys, say bye-bye.
We love you, Patty.
That warms my heart.
I'm sorry for your knee, Jumbo.
Oh, man.
He had a successful surgery, which just means that his knee, they didn't have to amputate, basically.
Wait, it tore his head. Oh, that's right.
I'm sorry you're short and nobody talks about you, Pavelski.
Oh, I love Pavelski. I like your hair.
We all love him, but we never talk about him.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
He's so sad.